I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Jesse Seif. He is the founder and CEO of Seif Studios. It is a veteran-owned media consulting and production firm operating from their custom-built recording studio in Annapolis, Maryland, close to where I grew up, good part of the country. He has a podcast called Life Designers that empowers people to make their biggest career pivots with confidence and clarity. He is also a classically trained percussionist, a published composer. My favorite trait is he is a Marine. He not only a Marine, but he served in the Marine Corps Band in the prestigious 8th and I Marine Barracks. Jesse, welcome.
Thank you so much, Craig. I appreciate it. You're very kind to invite me on here, so I'm excited to talk to you.
So for those that don't know, what's 8th and I, what's the Marine Corps Band, and why does that matter?
Yes. So right off the bat, I will clarify there are two premier Marine ensembles at 8th and I Marine Barracks. So 8th and I Marine Barracks is the historic barracks of the Marine Corps. It's the oldest post of the Corps, and that is where the Commandant's House is. And that's where all of the ceremonies happen. That kind of represents the brand of the Marine Corps. So you've seen probably the silent drill platoon on the billboards and on the commercials. That's where they call home. And the two musical ensembles I mentioned, one is the President's Own Marine Band. They were essentially established by an act of Congress. And John Philip Sousa is a famous director of that ensemble. So if you've heard of the Stars and Stripes Forever, all of those marches that are the classics, right? The classic marches. That's why he's called the March King. He was associated with that band.
Isn't that one of the songs they play like every 4th of July? I mean, everybody's heard Stars and Stripes Forever. Everybody's heard it. Whether you know the name or not, everybody's heard it.
Yep. And in case, and now if it's helpful, I'll just sing a few notes from it. Bum bum ba dum bum 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 bum. So if you didn't know the name of it, you probably would recognize the tune. But yes, it is a classic.
Written by a Marine.
Exactly. So that's the Marine Band. The sibling organization is the United States Marine Drum and Bugle Corps. And they are exclusively brass instruments and percussion. They don't have woodwinds. They don't have string instruments, and they are essentially a support organization for the Commandant of the Marine Corps. So we're touring the country, going all over the world, doing performances. You know, we're doing live television broadcasts. We're performing, you know, for funerals, for ambassador arrivals, inaugurations, for large events in Washington, D.C. So that's essentially the roles, and we split it up between those two units.
Yeah. You know, and you and I talked about this before. You know, of course I was in the Marines, but I was in a secure shop that you had to ring the doorbell to be let in, then you had to be escorted. And so everybody left us alone. We were in a fenced in compound, and then you had to get through more security to get into our shop. And it was nice because we were out of the public eye. You were like on the complete opposite of that. You're like your next door neighbor is coming out of the Marine Corps.
Yes, exactly. And I also felt like I had a part-time job at a dry cleaner's because your uniform just had to be pristine at all times. We're doing edge dressing, painting our shoes black. We're snipping off every little tiny thread, making sure the buttons are vertical. So we were very much in a culture of attention to detail and essentially having that bearing, that presence that is a part of the Marines brand.
Now, something I heard, I never got close to that part of the Marine Corps, but one of the things I heard was if you were there, you got accelerated rank. You didn't go through like Lance Corporal, private Lance Corporal, all that business. You just kind of, because of your skills, you automatically pinned on a few stripes. Is that true?
It is, and it depends on which unit you're talking about. So for the President's Own Marine Band, if you win that audition, you start at E6, which is awesome, right? And it's a civilian acquired skill. You have to win the audition. It's incredibly competitive. And because the President's Own Marine Band is the only unit in the entire Marine Corps that doesn't have a secondary combat function, you don't need to go to boot camp, and they're the only ones. So,
I didn't know that.
yes, they are the only unit in the entire Marine Corps that is not required to go to boot camp because their sole existence is to play music. However, the commandant's own, the unit that I was a part of, you do have to go to boot camp. So, and you do not start at E6. So you are likely to get promoted faster because it's its own MOS, it's incredibly small. So, at any given time, there's between 80 and 150 members of this drum corps. But because of that, because you're a 5512 and that's your MOS, there's a good chance you're going to get promoted faster than any other unit in the Marine Corps. So you still start at private first class or private, but you usually pick up rank quickly.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, I was parked at Corporal forever. I was in an MOS where I knew everybody in my MOS, and I had to wait for a sergeant to get out for me to pin one sergeant.
Yep. It still works that way. It's just, there's a lot more people in the pool of sergeants, depending on, if you have, 50 people you're waiting for versus maybe 15.
Yeah.
But corporal was fun, is a fun rank. Yeah, I like being a corporal. Sometimes.
Yeah. So how did you get started in music?
So I kind of fell into it, and my cousin was a drummer. He played in high school, and I think one Easter he left his drum pad and sticks over at my house, and I just kind of started to learn it and pick it up. But before that, I had been playing piano. So really my primary instrument that I had learned was piano, and most of it was by ear. I took a year of formal lessons. It didn't work out super well just because I had been learning by ear for so long that my teacher would play the thing that I was supposed to be reading, and I would essentially just pretend to read. I was probably like 8 or 9 years old at this point. So I was still playing fine, but it wasn't the reading that I was strong at. So from there, I started to pick up drums a little bit more, got into the high school drum line my junior year. So I actually started later than most people and played bass drum my first year, snare drum my senior year. And then I started playing in collegiate bands. So I was in the University of Pittsburgh's marching band after high school while attending a community college. And from there, I just met more people that were taking music more seriously than I was. So I always was like, okay, there's another level to this. There's another level to be had. And then I discovered the world of drum corps, which is like professional marching band, right? You're touring the nation, doing competitive style marching and drumming. And that was a bug that I didn't shake off. And sure enough, I marched in the Glassman Drum Bugle Corps 2011. I did some indoor drum lines. And then I eventually switched my major from engineering to music. So I transferred my credits from a community college in an engineering program and then started at IUP as a music major.
What type of engineering were you going into?
So civil
Civil.
engineering. So a lot of
Okay.
CAD, a lot of, Autodesk, very tedious precision.
Yeah. Well, and I learned the expensive way that engineering's not a field that rewards creativity.
No, typically not. There's a lot of parameters you have to stay within for good reason, for good reason.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, when you make, I mean, I did well in engineering. It's just, it's not a, if you want to be creative, it's just not a place to be creative. Because when you get creative, either in the case of civil engineering, people die, or in electrical engineering, you make multi-million dollar mistakes.
Right, both of which are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cool. And so then music, what did you pursue in music when you switched over to that?
So I was in the percussion studio and also drumming, and I say drumming very broadly. So percussion is the technical term for a professional who hits things professionally. And that could be anything. So a percussionist, you can be playing timpani, xylophone, marimba, snare drum, gong, triangle, cymbals, rocks, anything, right? If the piece calls for it, a percussionist's job is to figure out how to make it sound good. My primary instrument was marching snare drum, and that's because of the background in drum corps and marching bands. So that was essentially my primary instrument. I learned all of the other ones. Learn how to read music a little bit better. But yeah, it was a really immersive experience going to college for music and just being surrounded by people that were doing the same thing or eating, breathing, sleeping music all day long. And it was in that environment where I had my first, I guess, urge to start writing and start composing. So that's where that kind of took off. And the reason I actually got into the Marine Corps is because of a piece that I composed, and it was for the audition. So they said, you can play anything you want. Here's all the required stuff. You can play anything you want as an additional piece for your audition, but we just have to have the sheet music to it. So I'm like, okay. And that was the reason that I decided to notate out this piece that I was written over String Quartet Number 8 by Dmitri Shostakovich, and combining snare drum with, strings hasn't really been done before, apparently. And I named that piece Chopstakovich, and it's on YouTube. It has like, half a million plus views on it, and it's one of the most widely shared and best-selling pieces of snare drum literature of all time, which was surprise to me because it was the first thing I'd ever written. So
Wow.
that's what launched me into the Marine Corps career, is that piece.
That's cool. So of the various eras of classical music, what is your favorite era?
Oh, that's a tough one. Honestly, I have a thing for Russian composers, so I gotta say, just like late 1800s, early 1900s, like the Stravinsky era, even Tchaikovsky, Shostakovich, like I mentioned. So I don't know what it is, but that's probably what I would say.
Yeah, my cutoff is kind of in the romance era. I love Tchaikovsky, but as soon as it goes into the 20th century, there's just something that's not my thing.
Yeah, a lot of dissonant harmonies. And yeah, it's interesting. I appreciate the contrast too, because a lot of things are happening in that time.
Yeah. Well, cool. Now, one thing that's kind of interesting, I'm sure this will tie in here pretty quickly. You have a podcast called Life Designers. What's that about?
Yes, so that is about the intersection of personal growth, career and business development, and lifestyle design. And to sum it up with the three bullets there. And essentially, I'm interviewing people that have undergone major career pivots. They have gone from one thing that was, for sure going to be their trajectory, and then something happened. And now they had to change everything. So the point of the podcast is to capture those stories and share some of the resources and insights that those people used to navigate change. And we're interviewing entrepreneurs, business owners, coaches, people in talent acquisition, because they have a unique perspective from inside an organization, seeing people going through those changes. So some of the things that they're looking for. But it's been interesting. Yeah, I think we're like 38, 39 episodes in right
Wow.
now. And it's been very interesting to talk to all those people.
Oh, I bet. What was the inspiration for that podcast?
Well, I mean, a lot of my own story was radical career pivots. I mean, as we've been talking, I'm like, oh yeah, going from engineering to music would raise a few eyebrows. It's just like reading it on paper. And then from Marine Corps to entrepreneurship was another one. Everyone has a military transition story that they can tell. So I think a lot of the exposure that I had had to the veteran community and the military community, especially here in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, there's a lot of military bases, there's a lot of government agencies. I went to a ton of networking events and really just started to meet people and understand just the variety of stories and experiences that people have as they transition out of the military. And I wanted to make that a part of it, but not the theme of the podcast because I didn't want to exclude non-military people. So that's, I think, what got it in my head is this idea of transition, this idea of change and evolution. Everyone has a story there, right? Everyone has a story.
You know, when I got out, I committed to myself that I wouldn't jump out of an airplane or from any other tall height for at least a year after I got out because I'd seen it. You know, folks would get out and they'd discover life was like incredibly boring and they'd look for ways to go add interest back into their life and they'd injure themselves. And so I made that commitment. I remember, and that's when bungee jumping was first becoming a thing. And I remember seeing one of those. I'm like, oh, that looks fun. And I was like, nope, sticking to my commitment.
Good. It's a high bar to set jumping out of airplanes
Yeah.
for thrill seeking.
What's funny is when I got out, you know, I transferred up to NC State. I'd been going to a community college. And one of the very first classes, first semester, one of my first classes was calculus. And the professor passes a sheet around for everybody to write their name. And I write my name down, I pass it to the guy sitting to my immediate right. And he's looking at me, he's got long, shaggy hair and a big mustache. And he's like, "Were you in the Marine Corps?" And as soon as I heard his voice, I was like, "Rick, holy cow, we used to work together like years ago." But you know, he looked different. He didn't have a Marine Corps haircut and definitely didn't have a Marine Corps mustache.
Right. That's super cool.
Yeah, but we're sitting there like side by side, and we used to be in the same classified shop back in the Marine Corps.
Wow. That just goes to show how well you get to know people that you serve with. It's like you can recognize their voice and in their face, even if they're totally different.
Well, it was funny. We didn't overlap a lot, and he was like, "Oh, I'm surprised you remember me." And I was like, "Rick, you're a legend." And I started telling that story about something that happened. Well, he's now at this point, he's married with young kids. He's like, no, we don't need those stories coming out. It's like, leave that in the Marine Corps.
Yes. Probably for the best. Yeah, there's always a handful of stories that are best kept for the saloon only with Marine buddies.
Yeah. So, anyway, well, your pivot, you went from music to video, which I find fascinating.
Yeah. I guess the Chopstakovich piece that I mentioned was the first music video that I had created. And other musicians that I was going to college with were taking auditions at different ensembles. So helping them create videos and learning editing was really the first part of that evolution and precision editing. And fortunately, with an associate's degree in civil engineering, I understood generally how to navigate the digital tools that a video editor inherently has. So there's a lot of overlap there. And if you think about the synthesis between AutoCAD and engineering and music, a natural combination of those is movie making and video production, because you're still storytelling, right? You still have to hold people's attention. There are still elements of tension, release, right? Resolution, developments. There's a beginning, middle, and an end. And all of that I applied to all of what I learned in music, I applied to visual arts and just started to pick it up. And basically, when I was in the Marine Corps, they recognized that I had this core competency in video editing. And like the Marine Corps and most government agencies do, they will find people that have creative competencies and they will exploit them to the fullest extent. Which I was grateful for because it just gave me an opportunity to continue learning, producing, getting reps, creating videos, telling stories. So I actually served a B billet in the public affairs office for 3 years while I was in. And that involved running the social media campaigns and doing video promotions for our show tours. And then the battalion was interested and they're like, hey, you have somebody in your unit that's producing all of these incredible videos. We want that too. So quickly that became my main focus is the public affairs role in addition to being a musician. So by the end of my enlistment, we do these things called fit reps, right? Your fitness report, like look back, track your progress, what have you done, and what results have you gotten for our unit that usually puts you up for an award. I ended up tripling the social media following and reaching like 5.5 million impressions with the video campaigns that I had done. So that was essentially my first case study working in a military unit. And, they gave me the, Navy Marine Corps Achievement Medal. They're like, good job. And what's cool is like when I tracked that, it was 2020, and that those videos are still being used, right? They're still published online, continuing to compound in value even after I left. So I was super grateful to do that type of work that is continuing to benefit the unit and the brand.
Yeah, that's cool. And when I look at video, I have the tools. I have Premiere Pro, I have some other tools. I have the full Adobe suite. And the one thing I know is I can tell the story, but I don't have the chops to do the video. There's just something different when a pro does it versus me. I've never been able to put my finger on what that something is, but it's there.
So you can visualize what you want it to look like, but it's like the application, it's the technical doing it, how knowing what buttons to push and where to put things.
Well, there's actually an element of art there. I know the story I want to tell, but getting, and I actually did this for somebody. I took a video and we record like hour of video, maybe it was 40 minutes, and then I chopped it down to about three minutes, I think, to tell the story. And maybe there was some of the technical execution, doing the sound balancing, doing the transitions.
Yeah, both important.
And we handed it off to a professional, and what they came back with was just so much better.
It's interesting because especially whenever you're editing your own stuff, it's hard to have a third person perspective just inherently, regardless if they're a professional video editor or not. But the big advantage of having someone work on your videos is that they have probably created a lot of them in the past, right? And they have the repetitions piecing together, like you said, the transitions, right? How are we holding attention across time? What emotions are we trying to elicit from the story? And there's some aesthetic things too, like the color correction, the lighting, the sound design is surprisingly very important. If it's if it's going to create an impact, you want to be mindful of all of the senses that you're going to be engaging for the viewer. But yeah, it's I don't want to say it's a skill that can't be learned, because it absolutely video editing can of course be learned, but there is kind of an artistic element to it that makes it just better. If you know what you're looking for and how to do it.
There's a I watch a lot of YouTube videos, and there's this ad that keeps popping up. And I look at that, I just think, it's for some small business, an HVAC business. I'm like, don't you have any friends in your life that love you enough to come up and say, dude, pull that thing down. That's hurting your business.
Oh yeah. It's interesting because it depends on the industry, because there's also such a thing as overproduced. And you see that in talent acquisition and HR, where there's just like super polished company brand videos and employee testimonials that are just like 4K resolution, perfect lighting, studio settings. It's like, oh, you're doing a great job with the video, but the point that you're trying to convey is inauthentic, which is bad, which is bad for your actual goal. So I think that's even, that's one level above professional video editing, is understanding the purpose and the context and what success looks like for that video. And that's one example, like what you mentioned, for a contractor, it might do them a service to have a better produced video because that stands out from everyone else in their industry. So it just depends.
Well, the writing was bad. Probably the best thing in there, not the best. The audio pickup was it was echoey, but the writing was bad. It was a bad story, and it just bad acting and echoey. Yeah, the recording wasn't real clear, and yeah, but you bring up something, and it's one of the things that's kept me off doing a lot on YouTube. We do a lot of, for marketing, we do a lot of stuff on Facebook. And I love it because if you do something heavily produced, if I'm running an ad on Facebook with a professionally produced video, it's not going to perform as well as an amateur video. And I see the same thing with like just pictures. Something that's, a really, really nice picture professionally taken will not perform as well as something somebody snapped with their iPhone that's even framed, not perfectly framed. That's that medium. But when you move over to YouTube, at least my perception is, man, your videos need to be dialed in.
It's really important to be mindful of the platform and in the purpose, right? Ads versus content for customer education or, any other utility. You need to know what, like we said, success looks like there. And yeah, some of the best ads are people holding their phone and walking. And I'm sure you've seen that all the time. It's like, yeah, here I am in my house, just walking through it, telling you about this thing that's important, and I'm going to capture your attention because you don't know where I'm going. There's a subconscious element of rawness and realness that the algorithm rewards, and that human attention is automatically programmed to want to find out what happens. And that's the recipe for a good ad.
Yeah, in that video I told you about before where I was doing the story part, there was one part where I actually put in that the client had just this awkward little laugh. And it was not awkward in an irritating way, but awkward in a he's a little uncomfortable here. And and put that in only in one place, but it was just to humanize him, to make it feel, make it a little bit more real, a little bit less polished, while also trying to make sure that the guy who polished up the video did a really professional job polishing it.
Right. Yes. No, it's good to have people looking out for you there.
So tell me what you do at your at Seif Studios. What you guys have going there?
Yeah, so we have a physical studio here in Annapolis, Maryland area, but our focus is really video strategy and media coaching. And that's kind of what sets us apart from other studios, is we have the only system that combines strategy, coaching, and production together. And basically we're helping leaders show up on camera, right, in a way that they feel comfortable and confident. Kind of like these examples that you're mentioning. It's like, oh, if only they were better prepared with their messaging, or only if they had someone kind of guiding them through this, it would have just been foundationally better. So we do a lot of that. And, coming to a recording session means we've already done our work. We have already done our pre-production. We have a really great understanding of your brand voice, your client acquisition process, and exactly what are the videos that we need to drop in that will have the highest impact for you. So we do all of that up front before we even come and start recording stuff, because if we don't have a results mechanism, like a results mechanism in place to track the ROI of the videos, then we're probably not a good fit to create them, right? Like I would say, I've recommended that people go check out videographers, you know, freelancers, if they are just looking to record something, if it doesn't have a business application, like a wedding video, for example. It's like we don't do wedding videos, we don't do birthday parties. It's always in the context of business. So that's a roundabout what we do, and we are also in the space of AI integrations too. So talking about infrastructure for communications, and internally, externally, you're always building touch points and brand somewhere, right? Brand isn't just marketing. It's your conversations, your calls, the follow-ups after your calls, how you greet your team, how your team communicates, and then that whole ecosystem.
That's cool. Well, Jesse, I've been fascinated by you ever since we met, well, a month or so ago, and love what you have going on. How can people reach you?
I'd say the best way is on LinkedIn. I'm active there. That's our primary networking channel. You can also go to seifstudios.com. You can check out our work there.
You spell that?
Yeah. Its last name is Seif, Seiff, as in firefighter, and then studios.com.
Cool. Well, hey, Jesse, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, Craig. Great talking to you. Thanks for the invite again.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.